Fire! I've seen fire burn barns down. I've seen fire used for heating. I've seen fire turn hot dogs warm and brown for eating. Is fire good or bad? Both. It's valuable, but it's dangerous. Fire is exciting, enlightening, and inviting. And if you live in the West, maybe frightening. Fire is a symbol of God in the Bible. Abraham, in Genesis 15, made a covenant with God, or rather, God made a covenant with Abraham. And in that story, God appeared as fire to show Abraham how serious he was about sending his son to die. Moses was herding sheep, and God appeared to him with
the burning bush
with fire. On Mount Sinai, God descended in
fire
and smoke and the sound of a trumpet. Elijah also spent time at Mount Sinai. And what did he see?
Elijah that saw chariots of fire.
Okay, when Elijah was taken up, there were chariots of fire there, yes. But remember when Elijah had that wonderful experience there on Mount Carmel where he had that offering? By the way, there we have fire again, right? Fire from heaven. But then he fled for his life to Mount Sinai. And God said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And God came with
fire,
and then an earthquake, and then a wind. Maybe I'm getting the wind and earthquake mixed up, I'm not sure, and then a still small voice. But we have fire again. On the day of Pentecost, they were all together waiting for the coming of the Spirit, and the Spirit came with
fire.
And the world will end in fire when Christ returns. Jeremiah 23:29, "Is not my word like as a fire?" Hebrews 12:29, "Our God is a consuming fire." What are the three requirements for fire? Science class here.
Fuel.
Oxygen. And heat. And that's the order I want to look at them today. Typically, the heat involves a spark. Take a vehicle motor, the spark plug. Take a match. But the spark is a part of the heat. Now, we do also have spontaneous combustion sometimes. My dad's barn nearly burned down one year from hay heating itself up. It nearly burst into flame. There wasn't enough air. He had packed it tight enough. It didn't happen. This workshop is the second in the series, sort of. And so the assumption here is that the spark has sparked. The flame is lit. I'm assuming y'all are all good teachers here because you've already got your students excited about learning. Now, I happen to know that some of you are here because you couldn't get in over there. But either way, the spark is lit. How can we keep this thing burning? Imagine yourself at a campfire. You've got the fire started, but it's only about this big, okay? And we need a big fire. How do we do that? Now, if you are needing help in lighting the fire, the principles apply. And actually, when I first saw this topic, I struggled a bit because how in the world do I keep from overlapping with either Aaron's or Joseph's? And then I finally realized it doesn't matter because you're only going to take one of them anyway. And I want to today give some practical ways or some basic principles in which we can do this, and then you give me the practical ways. How can we actually do this for real in the classroom? So how can we, as teachers, keep the flame burning and growing, becoming brighter and stronger? Well, providing the three essential elements of fire: fuel, oxygen, and heat. And I have found that acrostics can be a useful way in helping us remember the basic points. Four basic points. Well, because we're going to be using fire as the motif of our talk today, but fire, we're not literally using fire in our classrooms, right? Maybe in a science experiment, but we're working with people. And because we're working with people, there's a fourth element that I think is very important. So, we're going to look first at fuel. Fuel is the resources that you have. So what are the resources that you have to fuel the fire, the excitement for learning in your classroom? We're not limited to 8. Enthusiasm is contagious, right? Let's narrow this focus a little bit. I want to talk a lot about enthusiasm today, but I'm going to put that under the next heading of the oxygen, the air. I'm thinking here of solid stuff, okay? Something you can get your hands on.
Curriculum?
The curriculum, the textbooks, absolutely. That's the raw materials for learning. What are other raw materials for learning? And that's the big one. I mean, really.
Storybooks.
Very good. Whether the ones you read out loud in story time or the library books they read in their free time.
Bible.
The Bible. The best textbook of all. Use it in devotions, but use it in regular classes too. Tell stories from the Bible. And stories is another one. The stories you tell. The things, the points, the anecdotes you use to bring out the facts in your lessons. Life experiences. The things that have happened to you. The things that have happened to your students. This is closely linked to stories. Some of these definitely overlap a lot. Your own bank of knowledge. You have studied. You have hopefully gone beyond. You know a lot more than what you're going to teach this year. And you can bring that out and give it to them. Anything more? What about nature? Yes?
Demonstrations.
Science demonstrations. I was just going to mention nature. Nature walks, bird watching, hikes. Really? We can learn from pretty much everything. And again, going back to the example of fire, pretty much everything will burn given enough heat. Even things we think of as being non-flammable typically have a burning point. So just turn that heat up and you can learn. But the focus today, thinking of fuel, is the textbook. The curriculum. That's the core of learning. That's the stuff we have to, typically, that's the stuff we have to get our students excited about. You have trouble getting your students excited about a nature hike? Really? No, that carries its own excitement. But you've had trouble getting them excited about long division, probably. Or, you know, okay. So you get the idea there. So how can we maintain... Because, again, remember, the fire's lit. We've got a small fire here. We want to expand it. How can we maintain and grow our students' interest in learning? Well, one thing I think is helpful, and this is point B here on your outline under Roman numeral 2, recognize the gift you have in a full curriculum. You've read Pioneer Stories. They taught school with the Bible and Pilgrim's Progress and the McGuffey Reader and slates. And that's about it. Real life example. This spring, a lady came to our greenhouse. Well, actually, first her dad came, and because of a conversation we got involved in, she came. And she has been involved in Christian school ministry in Guatemala for a number of years and struggles constantly to find Christian school books in Spanish. Well, I used to work full-time for Mount Zion Literature Ministry. I'm still involved a little bit with the curriculum aspect of it. And that was the conversation I got into with her dad. And so Deirdre came over, and I showed her our catalogs and told her what we got. And she got so excited. She said, people in the States don't realize what it's like. In the States, they're constantly pushing new books at you. If you've been to the CLE table, all the new books, all the new courses. She said, we don't have this. And this was like a gift to her. So recognize the gift you have in a full curriculum. Again, going back to fire, you're alone, you're in the woods, and it's dark, and you're trying to make a fire. That's the experience Deirdre finds herself in. That's the experience of long, long ago. Well, what do we have today? We've got heaps of firewood. We've got ready-made kindling, and we've even got paper. You know, we've got it all. We can have a fire so quickly today because of all the people who've gone before us and done the work for the curriculum. You know, there have been times that I found myself at 8 o'clock on a school morning, not ready for school yet. So I open the book quickly, and I look at the teacher's guide, and sure enough, there's a lesson lead in there, the main points are there, and 5 minutes later, I'm ready for class. You know, that doesn't happen when you're making up your own exercises. It's there. Now, don't let your teacher's guide do all your work for you. You know, get out there and split some of your own kindling, but use it for the maximum. It's here for your benefit. Point C, keep adding fuel, giving them new material to learn. Now, these points here, C through G, is where I want your input on practical ways to do this. C is fairly self-evident. How do we give them new material to learn? Well, I mean, okay, Monday we had this. Tuesday, you've got more lessons to do. Right. However, I find for myself, after the third and fourth and fifth time of teaching the same lesson, I'm getting tired of it. It's new for them, but, I mean, come on, we've done this before. And so sometimes I need to add a little something new for my own interest, just to keep it alive and sparking. D, stimulate a flagging fire with dry pine. Something easy and quick that gives them a feeling of accomplishment. Now, what might be some dry pine in your classroom? Your students are struggling. The fire's smoky. It's not putting off a lot of heat. The wood is wet, maybe. What are some examples of dry pine you can throw on there to get them excited again?
Are you looking for something like, just say, hey, we'll cut, you know, so-and-so out of the new exercises, and sometimes that's like, ooh, that's so much fun, I don't have to do quite as much, but
right.
That's a little bit of danger doing too much of that.
There is. And I just thought of a fire analogy for that here. Split your firewood up into smaller pieces. It'll create a hotter fire faster. Right? But you do too much of that, you don't have much of a fire, right? So there you go. Okay, that's a good example. What are some more examples of dry pine? Something quick and easy to stimulate them. Right, competition and flashcards. Maybe some kind of reward at the end or something. Good.
Have them put their heads together. I found that helpful already, like on a really tough lesson. Mm-hmm. I might not have the time to get in with them.
Right.
Then
right.
Let them get their heads together, and all of a sudden you see that.
Yeah.
Stimulating each other.
Let them work together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They can. I want to talk about a new term that I coined. I don't think it exists. Sympathetic combustion. you get close enough to a fire and you'll get lit as well. Yeah. Any more examples of dry pine? Those were good. Point E is now the opposite of that a little bit. Build for a long-lasting fire with plenty of seasoned oak. A hard, long, useful lessons that make them dig and sweat and study, that challenge them. So build for a long-lasting fire with plenty of seasoned oak, long, hard, useful lessons that challenge them. What are some examples of the solid oak? You know, we mentioned how too much kindling, too much dry pine makes a quick hot fire, but we need a flame that will burn, not just for the first 6 weeks of school when everything's fun. We want a good, solid fire in February.
I thought it was last evening when we were talking about essays, and that's something that, you know, small
asking my school board this year for some new materials, resource books, to help us write essays. I don't like to see an essay that's been written from one encyclopedia.
Right, right.
And so, but we have such limited resources at our school anyway, to choose to use several resources to write one essay. And so if we can get a few more of those new books in, it will help recharge us.
Right. Right. And there's something about a well-written essay or research paper. They feel good about it. I had a student who was assigned a research paper, 800 words or so, you know. It was 2,000 words. And it was good. That's the solid stuff that'll build that long-lasting fire. Do they always like it? No. What happens when you have a nice hot fire? Okay, you've started the fire, now you've thrown on the kindling, the dry pine, and now you load the oak on it. It takes a couple of minutes for it to come out, right? Yeah, it's a little bit tough going sometimes. Algebra lessons. I had some algebra students this past year. They sweated bullets over that stuff, especially one of them. But it was good for him. And I think he's a ninth grader, he's old enough, mature enough, I think he recognizes that. Yeah, were there days he didn't feel like it? Yeah, but it... What are some more ideas, ways we can challenge our students?
Ask them to speak some impromptu things about what they're learning from everybody.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part.
Impromptu, ask them to say, tell us about what I just told you about.
Oh, great. Yeah, that'll make them sweat. Yeah, but get them used to that, and that's a great way they can learn from each other. Yeah, I like that idea. I don't know if my students this year will like that.
My wife, when she taught high school, had the students, I think she maybe only had a couple students, but I suppose the marketing class work too, but have them teach, like saying, have them teach the lesson for today.
Mm-hmm. As teachers, you all know from experience that you learn something far better when you teach it. There you go. Good. Anything more? Point F then. Add some cedar for a pleasant aroma. This is the extras. The stories, the stuff that makes school enjoyable. You know, I wish that students would go home in the evening and talk about the really neat thing they learned in algebra class that day. It doesn't happen much. But they will go home and talk about the way... here's a story. There was a fellow I knew, I don't think any of you would know him, so I can say this story safely, who did not have a good education. This is a story I use for the importance of math, okay? Well, when he grew up, he was running a construction crew, and one day he had a job to do in which they had to pour a bunch of cylindrical-shaped piers. And, of course, you know, just... take your formula for the cylinder, you know, get your radius and your height and run that formula, convert it to cubic yards, and you know how much concrete to order. He hadn't got that far, but he had a construction master calculator. And there was a circle function on there, and so he ran some numbers and he ordered concrete. Well, they had these holes to pour, and they poured those holes full. And they also, later in the job, were going to pour a sidewalk. And so they had formed up part of that sidewalk because, you know, he knew he wasn't exactly sure where he was at on this. And so they filled all the holes and still had concrete left, so they went over and poured the sidewalk, and they still had concrete left. And so they formed up more of the sidewalk and poured it, and they still had concrete left. And they formed up more of the sidewalk, and they poured almost the entire sidewalk. And one of this fellow's workers is telling me about it. He was a little frustrated with this whole thing, having to form and pour concrete. And he gave me the dimensions, and I said, well, you should have, and I did the math, and I said, you should have had 2.5 yards of concrete. He ordered 9. That's the type of thing they'll go home and talk about at the supper table. You know, so that's the cedar there, the pleasant aroma. What are your examples of that? There you go. You're studying Mexico in social studies. Bring in Mexican food. Of course, by now we all eat Mexican food. How about trying something exotic? Yeah. Good.
When my students are tired of doing nouns and verbs and such like, okay, it's written down from whole.
Mm-hmm.
It can be their favorite thing, you know, whatever. Or you have 5 verbs that I give them and you have to ask them out to me.
Right.
You know, just something that mm-hmm. Oh, noun, verbs, they're fun after all.
Right. Yeah, good. Okay. Right. You just kind of make up the tune as you go,
yes.
Sort of? Yeah. Uh-huh. Good. And then you have them sing them back?
Mm-hmm. I don't usually.
Okay.
But they'll catch on. Like,
right.
They sound things back to me.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Good. Because and that's actually a huge plus in retention, because you remember stuff you hear in song way more. Good. The last point I have on fuel is make some s'mores. Allow them to taste the sweetness of learning. Learning is fun. Is it always all fun? Well, no, but learning is fun. School is fun. And I'm not talking about recess. I'm talking about school. Help them feel that sweetness, that satisfaction that, you know, yesterday I couldn't do this and now I can. There is a place and there is a time for extrinsic rewards you give them for good grades and good behavior. But if we can develop in our students intrinsic rewards, the reward that comes from the job itself, we have gone a long ways in building a lifetime fire of learning. Anything more that anyone has on fuel? If not, let's look at the oxygen, the inspiration. The root of inspire is the Latin word spirare, and the prefix in, meaning into, was added to that, of course. And so the original meaning of inspire is God breathed. And that is what our classrooms need. Our classrooms... Did you miss something?
I was just trying to figure out what you said when you missed the original meaning.
The original meaning was God breathed.
No.
Our classrooms need inspired teachers. People breathed into by God Himself. And if we had time, it would be interesting to do a word study here. The Hebrew word ruach is translated wind or breath. God ruach into Adam, the breath of life. The Holy Spirit is the ruach of God, the wind, the breath of God. That is what we need in our lives. You know, there's a certain amount of inspiration that can come from study, from the joy of learning, you know, eating those s'mores, from attending Teachers Institute. But ultimately, to have true, lasting inspiration to teach with joy and passion on February 13, it's got to come from God, the divine breath of God. So how do we get oxygen into our classrooms? Talk. Get the air moving. Now, I know technically when you're talking, the air that's coming out is carbon dioxide, which kills fires. But, okay, it's air. You know, get the air moving. Get your classroom alive. I'm very happy with the way you all are interacting and responding here. That's essential in getting that air moving and building that inspiration. You know how when you go to Teachers Institute, you get lots of quotes? Well, back when I first started going to Teachers Institutes, I'd hear these teachers quoting other teachers, you know, and you still hear, you know, Jonah says this and whatever. And I've always kind of wanted that there would be a quote out there with my name on it, you know. Maybe it's a little bit of pride, but I think I came up with one. If nothing's happening, then nothing's happening. You know, if they're not talking and interacting and learning, nothing's happening up here. No, I don't think that one's going to go far. But it's a little too profoundly shallow. Another part of getting the oxygen into our classrooms, I think sometimes we need to take into account the physical part of it. If the room is stuffy, get those windows open. If the students are draggy and sleepy, run around the schoolhouse. Get the oxygen, the air pumping. Yawning. Did you know yawning is actually contagious? If they start yawning, others will start yawning as well. So how do I inspire my students? Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I have another little part on my notes. A little bit on teacher inspiration. I don't have a lot on this. I didn't put it on my handout, but there's plenty of white space if you get inspired here. Preparation is essential for inspired teaching. You have to be an expert. You've got to know your stuff. There was a friend of mine came to my house recently, and he's just started a new job selling micronutrients, fertilizer type things. And I know him well. He's a good friend of mine. But he's just starting this, and he didn't have a lot of expertise in this subject. He brought me some free samples. He wanted me to try them, and I'm happy to try them. But he didn't really have a refined sales pitch. He wasn't sure of dosages and stuff, and so he had to get back with me. And that was all fine and good, but don't use that approach in your classrooms. It might be this way. Let me see what the teacher's guide says. Be prepared. Here's a quote. This is not a quote by me, but this is a quote worth writing down. Know your stuff. Know whom you're stuffing, and stuff them eloquently. Know your stuff. Know whom you're stuffing, and stuff them eloquently. Teacher enthusiasm is probably the number one factor in student interest and motivation. That one does show up later on the outline. I just put it in here because it's worth saying twice. So this thing of enthusiasm, does this mean we all have to be like the dynamic speakers? You know, like most of you have probably been in a class of Jonah Venus. No, we don't. To be very honest, it's a bit intimidating for me to come here and speak in competition with some of these good speakers here. But we have to be ourselves. You don't try to be an actor. Don't try to act like someone else. It's going to fall flat. Don't try to change your personality. And the fact is, we all express enthusiasm differently. And that's okay, because as your students get to know you, you know, if you have a new classroom this year, it'll take a bit. But after a while, they will know how to read the signs when you're excited. You might have a fifth of the energy and the volume and the charisma of certain speakers you admire. But if you're excited, they'll know it, and they'll respond. The worst bankrupt in the world has lost his enthusiasm. D.L. Moody was once asked why so many people come to hear him preach. He said, "I light myself on fire, and the people come to watch me burn." There is a book I have enjoyed reading by Rafe Asquith. It's called Teach Like Your Hair's on Fire. And that comes from an experience in his classroom where his hair was on fire. He was doing a science experiment. He was determined to make this thing work. He was trying to help one of his fourth grade girls with her experiment, and he was in there blowing on this little flame, and all of a sudden the students were like, "Mr. Rafe, your hair's on fire!" And the flame had gotten up and had singed him, and he didn't even realize that. He was so involved in the teaching moment, he didn't even realize. He had totally forgotten himself, and he says, teach like that all the time. So involved in what you're teaching, you don't even notice that your hair's on fire. That book is worth reading. He has another book as well called There Are No Shortcuts. Rafe Asquith. In case you're wanting that, his name is a little odd. Okay, back to the outline. How do I inspire my students? Number one, be an example. That should go without saying. Be inspired by God. And I want to talk more about example later. And number two, love your students. Get involved in their lives and their interests. I haven't been able to catch all the talks on relationships, but I did catch a nugget yesterday. Stop being nice. Be genuine, right? They know if you truly love them or not, or if you're faking it. And the beautiful thing is, most children, now there are the intractable, the rebellious, that we have to work with. But most children want to please those who love them. If they know, they can feel that you love them, they will respond. How can we show it? Well, get involved in their lives and their interests. Well, what if all the boys are interested in is trucks and tractors? I don't think there's anything wrong with guiding their interests a bit. If you can, if there's enough rapport there, and there should be, get them involved in your interests. I started teaching in a new school 2 years ago, and I had lived in the community about a year, but they didn't know me but so well. And for various reasons, I wanted to get them involved in something purposeful at first break instead of just hanging around and talking and shooting hoops. And I enjoy disc golf. And so I invented a disc golf course there at our school. I said, okay, we stand here and we go over to that tree there, and then we stand near that tree and we go for this post on the fence and whatever. And it took a bit of time, but they got into that. And then they got into it enough. I said, hey, you know what? If you're really liking this, I don't want to push this on you, but if you really like this, I'll buy you a disc. And I'll give it to you now, and that'll be your end-of-the-year gift, and problem solved. I know what to get them for the end of the year. And almost all of them wanted that. And it kind of died away after a while, but there's nothing wrong with channeling their interests a bit if they're not quite where and how they should be. You know, they say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Your students are imitating you. That's a good sign. Point three, love what you do. Well, obviously, I mean, why are you teaching except that you like doing it? Be interested in every subject. What's your weakest subject? Science?
English?
Math?
Math.
It's now, what's your favorite? History?
Reading?
Science. Can you get as excited about your least favorite as your most favorite? No, I don't think so. But get a degree of excitement there. You know, there's joy in learning. There's excitement in learning. What I found to be the most helpful for inspiring me in science class was to get in there and learn some of this stuff for once. Hey, this is neat. Hey, look at this. There you had it. I think it's okay even to fake your enthusiasm a little bit. You know, boost that volume a bit. Boost your body language. And now you have to be careful with that. Don't become an actor. But there's a Chinese proverb that says, assume the cheerfulness you do not feel, and soon you will feel the cheerfulness you have assumed. And I think cheerfulness and enthusiasm are similar enough emotions that it can maybe cross over. I used to not be terribly excited about English. It was never my worst. It was down there, though, pretty close to science. Well, what really triggered it was when I was asked to have a talk on the joy of grammar, of all things, 1 year. And I started saying, hey, this is neat. It was about that time I found a really good book on grammar and punctuation called Eat, Shoots, and Leaves. And now, well, some of you are in English class, I can get excited about English. Almost more excited about English than math, and that's saying something. Number four, know the joy of continued learning and share that. Guess what I learned last night? Go back to your classrooms this year, and in a month from now, you'll probably all be in school. At Teachers Institute this year, I learned. Did you notice how Steve Brubaker did that this morning? On this trip, we visited these towns, and I learned this story about Snowshoe Thompson. Yeah, there you have it. He is continually learning. And that example, I'm getting ahead of myself here with example, but know the joy of continued learning for yourself. Number five, spark their curiosity. Ask leading questions. Show up to class with mysterious bags. I have never actually done this, but I've heard it can be effective to begin the class with a mysterious bag and never use it. All through class, they're wondering what's in this bag, and all of a sudden they realize you're done. But they stayed with me. You better be careful. You know, you do too much of that, you'll be like the boy that cried wolf. But make sure there's something in the bag that you use occasionally. I was actually thinking of doing that this morning, but I didn't have room. So, start a story and then stop and say, I'll finish it tomorrow, or ask me at lunchtime. This past year, I teach upper graders. I wouldn't really recommend this book for too young students, and even so, I did some editing. I read The Scarlet Pimpernel. Are you familiar with that book? Okay, a few. That book will grab you. And I took perverse delight in stopping at the good spots. And they would complain. I said, well, that'll keep you coming back tomorrow. Apply that in the classroom as well. The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Orsi. Do not, if you have never read that book, do not read the end first. I absolutely forbid it. This is a book you have to read from the beginning. And then once you're done, you're going to read it the second time almost right away, right? Pretty much. Number six, trust your students. Especially if you have older students, treat them like adults. Younger ones, give them responsibility appropriate to their age and maturity. Is that going to be equal as every fourth grader? No, not necessarily. But trust them. And sometimes they break our trust. And that happened with a sixth grader this past year, and we had a conversation about how he has broken our trust. It was lying. And he's going to have to rebuild that. We're doing this and this and this because we can't trust you. We want to give you a chance to rebuild your trust, but it's going to take some time. But start with trust. In my classroom this past year and in this coming year, I only teach 2 days a week. I have grades 7 to 10. And when I'm there, I hit them hard with classes. We have math class on Monday morning for both Monday's lesson and Tuesday's lesson. And then we have language class for both Monday and Tuesday. And they might not get but so much work done Monday. Then Tuesday, they work entirely on their own. They're in one of the other classrooms, but they shouldn't have to bother the teacher too much. Wednesday, I come back and we have school again. And Monday morning, I give them their assignments for the week. And they're responsible to make sure it gets done. And guess what? They did. Don't try that with your fourth and fifth graders. I have a seventh grader coming on this year. I think maybe I'll have to tighten that rein just a little bit on him. But give them responsibility. Trust them. Number seven, help them realize the coldness of ignorance. Again, back to our fire motif. If a fire heat is learning and education, a lack of that is cold. Ignorance is cold. You know, a cold person, here again, in the woods at night, a cold person will come to the fire. Make them feel the cold. Help them know how much they don't know and how much there is to know. Number eight, be positive and proactive. How do those two go together? Well, the positive, we understand that. Be encouraging, be commending. Commend them for a job well done. Encourage them to do their best. But be proactive, especially in discipline. How in the world is discipline positive? What are your thoughts on that?
Should turn your hearts toward God.
Right. Hebrews 12. Chastening is not pleasant, but it does a good work in us. Proactive discipline, especially, is simply the thing of the ounce of prevention versus the pound of cure. Putting some structure and some order into your classroom, some things that this is the way we do things, and then you don't have to call them down for misbehavior at the classroom. Yeah, you still will anyway, okay? But proactive takes care of a lot of the need for reactive discipline. Number nine, ask intelligent questions to get their interest sparked and to get their minds working. And I emphasize, ask intelligent questions. Don't ask questions that are so far below their level that it's like an insult to answer it. I have occasionally done that with older students just to make a point. You know, do you know how to add 2/5 plus 1/5? What's the answer? 3/5. Well, okay, that's what we're learning in algebra today, except we have 2x plus 3x is 5x. You know, there's a time for that, but make sure your questions are intelligent. tell stories, number 10. I had a teacher once tell me, a veteran teacher, that within 2 years, your students will forget almost everything you've taught them. I'm like, come on. And so I decided I'm going to do a bit of a survey. So I surveyed some of my former students. I chose history because those were probably the most lively classes in my room. I said, what all do you remember about history specifically? Well, I was calling them cold, okay? I didn't give them a week to think about it and write me a paper, but they were fairly blank. And I asked the better students. Is that discouraging? No, because they will remember the atmosphere of your classroom and the stories. I remember very little specific content of my upper grade school teacher in history class, but I still know that he's the one who sparked my interest in it. And they'll probably remember some of the stories. Here's one of my favorite ones. Are you familiar with the Magna Carta that King John signed in the year 1215? Sort of, kind of. Basically, King John was a despot, but his nobles, his upper-level lords, his dukes and earls had enough power that they were eventually able to force him to accede to their demands and give them more freedom, or else they would eject him from the throne. And there was a lot of conflict went on there, but finally one day, in a meadow in the area of Runnymede, King John was forced by his nobles to sit down under a great arch and under a great oak and sign the Magna Carta. Magna Carta is Latin for Great Charter, which basically promised basic freedoms and liberties, which incidentally, some of our freedoms and things today in the United States do go back to that. Anyway, the story is told that there was a tour guide one day giving a group of tourists a guided tour, and he says, you know, right in this area, somewhere here, maybe about where this tree is, stood the granddaddy of this tree, and this was the great oak under which King John sat to sign the Magna Carta in 1215. And one of the lady tourists looks at her watch and says, it's 1230, we just missed it. That story helps them remember that date. Number 11, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Teacher enthusiasm is probably the number one factor in student interest and motivation. And I put that probably there because I just hesitated to make an absolute statement there. Because, to be fair here, there are days when we don't feel well. There are days that the weather does get to us. And those are days when the grace of God is there for us. And we need to rely heavily on Him. But you don't have to be this exuberant person every single minute in your classroom. And yet, teacher enthusiasm is important in student interest and motivation. Don't try to impart your own ideas so much. Rather, kindle empty minds. Again, back to that concept of the coldness of ignorance. I have to move faster here. Point three is rigor. And by this, I mean the heat. And I had a little trouble. I needed an R word there. What I really had first in my mind was a discipline or order or structure. Rigor is the quality of being extremely thorough and careful. And rigor is the heat needed to keep the fire burning in our classrooms. Like I said, order or discipline, a quiet and studious atmosphere would fit. Wait a minute. We just talked about enthusiasm. How does quiet fit with that? Well, there's a time for everything, right? When you're not teaching, it should be quiet and studious. Study the Songs of the Time, Dear Lord and Father of Mankind. Especially the end of, I think it's the fourth verse. Take from our souls the strain and stress, and let our ordered lives confess the beauty of thy peace. There is beauty and peace in order. An orderly classroom is not the easiest thing to achieve always. It takes rigor. It takes heat, but it's worth it. Heat can be uncomfortable and disturbing at times. Some of you looked very uncomfortable Tuesday night after all the activities. At home in Alabama, we need air conditioning to survive, we think. And I came out here, and the room where we're staying does not have air conditioning. We stepped into that bedroom the first night, and it was extremely warm in there. And I couldn't sleep. There was a nice window fan, and it didn't take too long. It was nice and cool at night. We don't get cool nights like this at home this time of year. And after a while, I got sleep. But heat was uncomfortable there. Heat can destroy lives and homes and businesses. I've seen fire burn barns down. I've seen fire used for heating. I've seen fire turn hot dogs warm and brown for eating. Because good things come from heat, too. I love the South. Sorry about you folks who can't enjoy magnolia blossoms. The smell is amazing. And then you can eat okra all summer long. It's great. Come on, it's good. Come on down, I'll give you some. And our fig tree just started producing. And all of those figs are amazing. Heat is essential for life. Obviously, heat from the sun. Obviously, if you were an Eskimo, you know, heat is essential to survive. Heat also refines. Think of gold in the furnace. Heat is refining. Heat also directs. You might be critical of the Southern so what, sit on the front porch culture, but guess what? It's because of the heat. It directs your energy. You realize it's not worth it getting out there and tearing it up because we have nice days in December when we can go out and work. And so in July, you just sit on the front porch and drink your tea. Don't waste your energy. We need the heat of rigor in our classrooms. There is a story about Miss Barracombe who came to a new school, and the school was terrible. And typically the teachers would open the year with this plea for adjustment and let's all be nice to each other. She didn't. She came to them and said, it is a far cry. Actually, I should just read it directly. It's more precise that way. My name is Virginia Barracombe, and it will be Miss Barracombe to you indefinitely. Remember, this is a bad school, okay? I'm not necessarily recommending this for 2 weeks from now. One of these days, you will meet someone from the last school in which I taught. The worst that he tells you about me will be true. It's a far cry from a child to a man, and it's not through games that we get there. You and I are bound together in a contract for 1 year. I teach, you learn. Behave yourselves and pay attention, and this will be one of the good years of your lives. You have a minute to prepare yourselves for a review of the meaning and use of decimals. It was the shock treatment, all right. But with economy, with the clarity of piano keys struck singly, above all with authority, we were at work in the first 5 minutes. We, who had always had a period in which to get ready. And the story goes on to tell how she had control. And if you want it, contact me. Send me an email or something. Tell me you want it. I can mail it to you. It's worth reading. Like I said, you probably don't need that approach in your classroom. But economy, clarity, and authority are essential in properly using rigor. Okay, now I'm going to talk about how to properly use rigor. Because rigor is like fire. It's essential, but it's potentially dangerous. I, at times, overdid the rigor in my classroom and reduced my students to tears and a feeling like they could not do what the teacher was asking them to do. That's going too far. How do I properly use it? Have structure in your classroom. I've said it before. I'll say it again. We need order. We need procedures. We need regulation. Proactive discipline is one of the best ways to keep order, but don't be afraid to use punitive discipline. You have broken the rules. This is the consequence. Again, can it be overdone? Absolutely. Too much heat is dangerous. But what happens to a fire if you take away the heat? It goes out. There needs to be a certain amount of pressure. Okay? That's the idea I'm trying to get, pressure. And that's point two. Push your students to achieve their full ability. And guess who the toughest ones are to do this with? The straight A students. Because they get 95s and you're over here struggling with this guy who's pulling 80s and you know he could pull 90s if he just would. And so you're... And the straight A students come out of school lazy. I'm one of them. Inspire them to go above and beyond. Larry Martin said that sometimes he tells his students to go ahead, if they have a lesson where they're supposed to write all the adjectives, he says, go ahead and diagram the whole lesson if you want to. Then you don't have to pick out all the adjectives. It's way more work. They do it, they love it. Inspire them to go beyond. Give the fast students extra work. You knew that, right? Make sure it's purposeful and interesting, not just busy work. Busy work is a wet blanket. on the fire of inspiration. You're just shoving it at him because you don't know what else to do. It's a wet blanket. It's not helpful. Was that the first or the second offer? Second. I completely missed the first one. Sorry, I would have been going faster. If you need to leave, go ahead. I'll finish my outline. Number three, require diligence and perseverance. Keep on and on and on and on and on and on. You've got it. Number four, get them to work. Make them take notes. Make timelines. Do demonstrations. The one doing the work is the one learning. Number five, sometimes you have to turn up the heat. They're unwilling to study. They're lazy. They're having a bad day. You're the teacher. You're the boss. Require them. Study. Dig in. My dad used to tell me before he spanked me, until you learn to discipline yourself, I have to do it for you. Guess what? He hasn't spanked me in a while. A well-trained and disciplined mind is one of the greatest gifts we can give to our students. So don't be afraid to turn up the heat. Number six, be consistent. Don't blow hot one day and cold the next. Number seven, teach them to generate their own heat. If you blow air onto a fire with a bellows, it can actually get kind of addicted to that extra oxygen, and when you take it away, it struggles. So sometimes you have to step back and make them do it on their own. I was going to talk a good deal about example, but basically go through these things that we have said and ask yourself, am I an example of this? Is this the way I live? Do I live a disciplined life? Do I know how to dig in and study? Do I take homework home? Am I consistent? Do I push myself or am I lazy? Now, don't burn your candle at both ends too long, you run out quicker. But it's far better to burn out than to rust out. The model of Christianity is discipleship. Followers. We are followers of Christ. Can my students safely follow me in my walk with God? What we need in our Christian schools today is not more textbooks, but text people. People in which the text, the Word of God, has become a part of us. It doesn't matter so much what you say as who you are. Your students will admire and imitate you for better or for worse. One of my former students was here this week. She's left already. She told me 2 days ago that, you have any advice for me? And she said, I'm probably going to run my classroom pretty much like you ran yours. It's the way it is. And who is sufficient for these things? That's 2 Corinthians. We just have a few more sufficient verses from 2 Corinthians. Take home with you 2 Corinthians 3:5. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. And 12:9. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. You feel weak today? You should. That's where God's strength is made perfect. Probably my go-to verse more than any other in teaching school. If any of you lack wisdom, finish it.
Let him ask of God.
That giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, but let him ask in faith. Lean on God, commune with him, then leave your closet and enter your classroom in brave faith, confidently expecting God to meet each need, to give strength for each day, to light a fire within you and each of your students that will never go out. Thank you. Mm-hmm.